Welcome back to Marvel Good Yay, the spinoff podcast of the Geek Easy podcast, where we're going back and rewatching all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films leading up to the release of Avengers Endgame. I'm Pixel Dan.
I'm Jonathan Leonard.
And Jaron McCaffrey.
And today we are discussing Avengers Age of Ultron, or as my son calls it, Age of Voltron. Because he just can't distinguish the two words, no matter how many times I try to correct him. You want to kick us off, John?
My youngest, who is not quite two, only wants to watch Elmo, and it's one of the only words she ever says.
Yeah.
So when we were turning this on, she kept asking for Elmo, Elmo, Elmo. So I said, okay, fine, honey. We'll watch Avengers, Age of Elmo. And my son, like, his eyes lit up, and he just took that and ran with it. Started telling me the story, what was going on, how the fights were going, and everything. I'm like, this is bananas.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Kids and their words.
Yep.
All right. Avengers Age of Ultron, the follow-up to the first Avengers movie and a whole bunch of other movies.
Yeah.
Theoretically the end of Phase 2, but then we found out it wasn't. Yeah. Because Ant-Man actually ends Phase 2. Joss Whedon's second.
I feel like that's a, like we're just getting punked. Yeah, I don't feel like that's a thing.
It's a real thing, man. Hey, it makes sense. It's like an epilogue, you know?
It's
like,
in the Phase 2 box set.
Yeah, that's how the box sets work.
No, that's just
That's how Marvel has proclaimed it.
Somebody,
I am not one to argue with the Mighty Marvel.
They proclaimed it. Somebody came in and they were like, hey, how funny would it be if we just ended Phase 2 on Ant-Man instead of Ultron?
Yeah.
Joss Whedon's second outing on a Marvel movie, and the honeymoon was over, as it turns out, which is not a declaration on the quality of movie. I guess it is a little bit, but it is funny, as somebody who reads behind the scenes stories usually after the movies come out. Mm-hmm. The tonal shift from 2012 when he made Avengers and 2015 when he made Age of Ultron. Like, I felt like this movie broke him for a while.
Yeah.
You know, which was sort of a bummer on many levels.
Right.
But from a box office perspective, we're looking at $460 million domestic, $946 million foreign, for a total cum of $1.4 billion. So one of the many Marvel movies in the billion-dollar range now. On a budget of $250 million, we in the business call that a financial success. then you get into the reception on this one, which right. was lukewarm.
Yeah.
I would say this is one of those movies. Again, I don't know of many people who hate this movie, but you don't get a lot of people singing its praises either. It's got its flaws. We'll get into as we discuss here. It's also got its successes. I think it's a good movie. I really like a lot of the things they did here. It does get convoluted at times.
Mm.
This is when Marvel gets full range into some of the world building stuff that starts to take a little bit of precedence mm-hmm. over storytelling. It's not a mistake they make often, but it happens in here a couple of times. Phase 2, I would say, always feels like the weak phase of the MCU to this point, which is weird, because then you go back and watch it. I mean, we've been rewatching it now, and I mean, I really like Iron Man 3. Thor the Dark World fits into that description pretty well as far as being the weak phase, but then you run into Captain America Winter Soldier, yeah. which is one of yeah. their best. You run into Guardians of the Galaxy, which is not a weak movie in any right. way, shape, or
yeah.
form.
Yeah.
I really feel like a lot of that impression might come from Age of Ultron, because it does not have the feel of that first Avengers movie at all.
Right.
Like, as good as this movie is, it felt a little disappointing walking mm-hmm. out of it, because it just did not hit on all those same cylinders.
Right.
And I feel like Guardians of the Galaxy, which had came out before this with a band of unknowns, did it better.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Which is yep. weird to say.
You're right.
But you walk out of the completely surprising team-up movie that you never saw coming and absolutely adored, and less than a year later, you walk into the one that you think you're going to feel that way about, and you walk out going, eh, it's fine.
Right.
That's a bummer, you know?
Yep.
Anybody else have any thoughts?
No, I mean, that's it. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah,
No, I feel like you totally nailed the overall feeling on this movie.
Yep.
And that's exactly how I still felt after watching it this time around. This is one that I haven't watched as many times over. This is probably my third or fourth time watching this movie compared to, like, Guardians and the first Avengers, you know, that I've watched multiple times. Thor Ragnarok, I've seen so many times at this point. But this one I haven't seen near as much, and so it's been a while since I've watched this one. And even this time around, I felt that exact same thing all the way through it. It just didn't feel like it was quite there for me. There are a lot of little things in it that I like, and I can appreciate the world building that they're doing, but it does hurt the overall flow a lot. You're totally right where this really feels like they kicked it up a notch as far as the world building goes. It was kind of amazing to realize it was this long ago that they started talking about Wakanda.
Yeah.
And how long it took us to get to Black Panther from this movie.
Yep.
But, like, they started sowing the seeds of Black Panther all the way back here. So that was kind of cool.
Because we got Ulysses Klaw in this movie.
Yep, Klaw was...
So, sort of his mini-origin story.
Yep, Klaw's in the movie. Yeah, getting his arm ripped off by Ultron. And, you know, there's lots of vibranium in this movie. You know, so they really start talking about, like, you know, they introduce the vibranium into the world outside of Cap's shield. As kind of a big deal, as, you know, more than just it's a strong metal, the technology, all that good stuff. Like, that's a thing that started happening here, and this is long before Black Panther showed up.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting in hindsight to go back and realize how far back they were really building that stuff. So, like, I can appreciate it, but, like, that scene specifically does almost feel like it's a little out of place, like where it's like they go on the side quest in a video game to go stop Klaw, you know, while they're in the process of this whole Ultron thing. And I know that it ties together with Ultron, but it still felt that way. It still felt like a weird side quest. And yeah, so I definitely get that a lot in this.
So I really like this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Phase 2 feels like a weaker phase because it's a darker phase. And
it's The Empire Strikes Back.
You know, MCU. and it kind of tells some more complex stories, you know, with Iron Man 3 and Tony Stark's whole PTSD thing, and is he Iron Man, you know, is he wrecked, is he going to be Iron Man? We'll just skip talking about Thor the Dark World. you know, but
so good.
But yeah, you know, Captain America Winter Soldier was, you know, who can he trust, and all about tearing down the shield organization that we had set up.
Yep.
You know, in the Avengers, like, just rip that all down.
Yep.
And then
they gave him a show.
Right, you know. And then we get to Age of Ultron, and the storyline is all about ripping the Avengers down. I think that this is a stronger story than Avengers. I am really into this story, the story of Age of Ultron. But as an Avengers, but it's almost like the story needs to end with nobody getting along, and they just don't go for that.
Didn't do the follow through.
You know, like they build up the team falling apart, and everybody's kind of little separate stuff. And I really love, you know, you get to see so much character interplay here. And whereas in the first Avengers, like, the first Avengers was just such a fireworks display, you know. And it's like, I can't believe we got here. This is so awesome. You know, and so anytime we get to see somebody play off each other, it's kind of flashy, you know, maybe it's a superhero fight, you know, maybe it's, you know, whether it's Thor and Hulk cutting loose or, you know.
There's a novelty aspect to it.
Yeah, you know, and in this one.
Not in a bad way.
But. Yeah, no. And in this one, we're starting to get to see the characters play off each other a little more, you know. And I really like that. I think there's a lot to be said for that. And to the point, it almost feels like, you know, because and there's even the part at one point Ultron says something about, you know, I have the one thing they'll never have, which is unity, you know, but then they never really give them like a good reason to be unified again, mm-hmm. other than Ultron being there, yeah. you know, yeah. to where you almost feel like they needed to lean a little more heavily on like, I mean, yeah, you know, maybe we win because we're not, you know, we're different, you know, I mean, almost like a Borg collective type thing, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, yeah. our diversity is our strength,
yeah.
and instead, you know, they just went for like, well, what if there's a big robot fight in the yeah. you know?
And I think that's one of the, like, it's one of the weaker Act 3s, I think, and part of that is because it felt like a recreation of the first Avengers ending, you know?
Yeah.
Not exactly, but also necessarily, but
much weaker.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah,
there was none of the, you know, in the one there, you know, even just the one scene where we get, you know, Cap and Widow on the street, and then Iron Man flies by, and then we follow Iron Man as he flies up the building, kills a couple things, and then there's Hawkeye on yeah. top of the building, and then the big whale comes by with Thor and Hulk on the back of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
we don't get anything like that yeah, in this no. one. We get one scene where we kind of
get that in the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, at the opening, but nothing in the end.
That's right.
And the one thing we do in the end, we do get the big team shot, except it's bigger now because the team yep. is bigger. And I really feel like that's one of those things that probably looked great on paper, the idea of just doing it again, but with the expanding roster.
Right.
But, man, when it played out in the actual movie, it just looks like a carbon copy that's just not as good. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, it just yep. feels like a weaker thing. Like, you're literally just doing the exact same thing again. Right. And it just didn't, you know, you don't get any oomph from that.
Yep.
You know?
I will say on the, you were talking about how, like, they didn't really play on, like, them still not getting along at the end. Because they right. did kind of come back together at the end. And
yeah.
they left and they all kind of went their separate ways, but, like, they seemed on good terms. However, this does play into Civil War, which is coming
for
up
sure.
pretty quick. So at least they didn't, like, they didn't totally mend the fences and get all best friends again.
Yeah.
Like there are, the one thing that this movie does is it has some pretty significant
developments,
side effects
yep.
going forward. Yeah. Because, you know, the Sokovia Accords becomes a big deal going forward. This whole Civil War thing happens. So, like, there's definitely some animosity between all of them still that's really going to play out in the future.
Yes.
So it's still there.
Yes.
It's just, I totally see what you mean, though.
Yeah.
Like, it still felt a little, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I want to, you know, I think we're getting that point across. Like, I really like this movie.
Yes.
I think we all yeah. agree on that. It's just, it doesn't have the energy that a lot of the other ones do.
Right.
I love the idea of the storyline they go through with Ultron himself.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Ultron mm-hmm. himself. I'm a big James Spader fan anyway.
Yeah.
I can't give him the credit that I can give, like, a Josh Brolin, who you can really see come right. through in Thanos. But just from a personality perspective, I really feel yeah. like he brought something to, like,
yeah.
like he made him robotic, but also,
yeah. Well, he didn't do, he was strictly voice work, right? He didn't do,
he might have done some of the motion capture, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, mm-hmm. with the way the CG comes through, like,
yeah.
it doesn't really matter that, you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. I mean, we'll get there, but I feel like CG capturing Brolin for Thanos added to it rather than just having a big cartoon Thanos.
Yeah, well, but the thing voiced. Is, like, you can see Josh Brolin in Thanos,
right?
You know, like,
yes.
the way he looks
yeah.
and the yes. way he does. But he's got that. With Ultron, like, he doesn't really have the facial expressions so much shine through, so it's not
which,
exactly
which I think
the same
is my
level.
Point.
Yeah.
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Like, you're right.
So, like, even if it is you're James right. Spader moving, it still looks like Ultron moving around, whereas
yeah. Yeah.
Thanos looks like big purple Brolin.
Right.
Moving around, you know? But as far, like I said, as far as giving him personality, I think it was a great mix there. And I think he was I very much enjoyed the times that he got to spar with Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, it doesn't happen often. The one time in that scene where they all show up with the claw scene you were talking about,
yeah.
you know, as much as that's kind of shoehorned in, I still really love the banter.
Yeah.
When that goes down, there's a couple of parts of that scene I really love. That's also the one, I think that's the one where the Thor throws the hammer
mm-hmm.
and Quicksilver runs by
grabs
and
it.
Is like sees yeah. it in slow motion. Is like, oh, and tries to grab it and it just gets yanked.
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like out of whack. That's also where Hawkeye got over on Scarlet Witch
yeah.
in that scene. So
yeah.
a lot of cool things happen in that scene. And the one, like the thing I focus on the most probably in this movie that I really enjoy that I think was a great move was making Hawkeye the heart of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, this is the closest thing we're probably going to get to a Hawkeye movie, I would almost say. Like, he's not the biggest character, but he is sort of, like, the focal point as far as, like, the team goes. Like, he gets a lot of time and a lot of world building of his own. You find out the thing about his, the stuff about his family. They even do those bits at the beginning where they're talking about him having a girlfriend, and he's like, I don't have a girlfriend, you know, because he's got a wife and kids that just nobody knows about.
Yeah.
And they have that really nice scene, I think, with him and his wife, where he's basically sitting there talking about, like, you know, they don't need me, and she's like, no, like they specifically do need you because you were that guy. And the scene at the end where they're really hammering it home, where he's sitting there with Scarlet Witch, and is like, look, there's some crazy stuff going on right now. We're fighting giant robots. I got a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense.
Yeah.
If you need to chill here, that's fine. Don't worry about it. But if you come outside, you got to bring it.
Right.
You know, because that's what we do here. And I really think that kind of, you know, that is basically the essence of being an Avenger. You know, like, that really brought that through in a way none of the other characters really have before. Like, we don't know what's happening here, and none of us are really fit to be here. Individually, but if we all do this, we can do it.
Yeah,
and I think that was a very good move. That was one of the stronger points, whichever
one of those
of
things.
The movie. Yeah. Parts.
so I have an alternate take on that, because I think what they did with Hawkeye is a little glimpse of, like, you know, master filmmakers using our emotions against us, and sort of playing with the different tropes and stuff that we're used to, because they set Hawkeye up to die.
Yeah.
You know, like, that is his, he gets shot in that first scene, and they put him together, and they very specifically have a conversation where, you know, Scarlet Witch kind of is like, you know, pretending to need this guy brings us together. And, you know, Tony Hawk is like, oh, he's, Tony, you know, Hawk. He's flat. Or Tony Stark.
He's like, I'm going to bust this 720 right now.
Tony Hawk comes in and does a 720 on his face.
It's pandemonium.
Tony Stark says, you know, calls him, you know, says he's flatlined, and he's like, no, I'm going to live forever. I'll be made of plastic, you know. His wife, you know, they tell him be okay. You know what I mean? Like, they set him up this whole movie to die. And we see it happening. I remember watching this movie specifically in the theater going, it's too bad they're going to kill Hawkeye. You know, you know.
You should know weed never makes it that easy.
Well,
You're 100%, you're 100% right. I felt all of that stuff, and I thought all the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, looking back, I definitely did.
Yes.
But knowing what we know, we should have known he was the one guy who couldn't die.
Probably.
Because you can be sure of two things. Whedon's going to kill somebody, and you'll never see it coming.
Right. you know, probably. You're right. But it pays off so well, because They set us up to know that Hawkeye dies, but then they still do, like, a really good job of making us really not want Hawkeye to die, you know?
Right.
By showing us his family and the kids and everything. Yeah. So now we're like, you know, man, they're going to kill Hawkeye? This sucks, you know? Thanks. And then we get to the end, and the moment he dies, and I really was watching it this time. They build to it so... I mean, they show him, he gets off Sokovia. He's on the helicarrier.
Yeah,
well, he's not on the helicarrier, but he's on one of the little
ships. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he sees the kid that he has to go save. And, you know, they even show that moment where he's like,
yeah.
And he goes running back out, and he grabs the kid, and that's when
Ultron
comes by in the Quinjet. And, you know, the bullets are, like, slow motion coming in on him, and, you know, he sees him coming and, like, braces for it, like, he knows he's about to die, and then Quicksilver comes in, pushes him out of the way, and Quicksilver gets shot to pieces.
Yeah.
And, like, that is so... It was just such a stomach drop.
Yep.
And it's a stomach drop not because we cared about Quicksilver at all, but because they executed it so well that we appreciate... Like, it caught us by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
we appreciate Quicksilver's sacrifice. You know, you're like, you know, because so there's that moment where you're like, and it creates an instant like, oh, thank you, good job, Quicksilver. Oh, you're dead. And it, I really just was like, wow, that was so well done.
Yeah.
You know, they used everything. They knew exactly how to use it to turn that emotion on us. Because, you know, Quicksilver was a bad guy for half the movie. And even when he wasn't a bad guy, he was kind of a jerk.
I dug him.
Yeah.
He was fine. But you did not attach.
No.
He did nothing to endear himself. No, yeah.
I wasn't emotionally attached to him.
Right.
It was just fun.
Yep.
I will say I really did enjoy the way they built the twins also, and the way they, I mean, there's a lot of good storytelling that does go on in this movie. The way that they were set up as bad guys, but then when you actually get that scene where they're talking to Ultron and you find out their motivation, basically, all they want to do is destroy the Avengers because they've got legitimate beef with Stark.
Yeah.
And all of these, you know, throughout this entire series, they do a really good job of making you love Tony Stark, but then reminding you of what a hypocritical D-bag he is.
You know, like they brought it back to the missiles with his name on it again.
Yep.
Like it always comes back to.
They basically said like a missile came into the room, like the second one came in and just laid there.
Well, the first one came in and killed their parents.
Yeah. And then the second one came in and laid there next to them, not exploding. And they just sat there and stared at Tony Stark's name for 3 days, waiting to die. And it really brought, you know, like a level of, because at, you know, when they first are introduced, they're just Hydra experiments,
right?
You know, you got nothing, and then you get this, you know, then they're teaming up with Ultron, and then you get that scene where they're explaining that's what's going on, and the entire time, even when they are bad guys, like they're being duped.
Yep.
Because Ultron, and that's that was a great Ultron aspect too, because he legitimately cared about these two.
Yeah.
Like he wants to kill every human on the planet, but he legitimately cares about these two. You know, like he was hurt when they double crossed him.
Yeah.
And it's just such a weird way, like, you know, you empathize with this villain who's trying to destroy the entire world, and he's a robot. So there's no reason you should care about him, but there's a moment where he's just sad because his friends are turning their backs on him. Yeah, you know, you're like, man, they're right to do so, but why do I care right now?
Oh, Ultron was right about us all. Kill us, just kill us. We're jerks.
I really like the portrayal of super speed in this. Mm-hmm. I hated in the X-Men movies when they introduced Quicksilver and the way they they portray his super speed like he's like that's the most powerful power in the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
You know, except for maybe I don't know, I feel like that's the most powerful power in the X-Men movie. He just comes across like omnipotent, you know, like he just does whatever they need him to do. Oh, Quicksilver does. I mean, he saves everybody from the exploding mansion.
Yeah.
In this one, I felt like it was a little more grounded and a little more, you know, it didn't feel overpowered. It didn't feel like when I watch the X-Men, I'm like, super strength or super speed ain't that special, you know?
Explosions are also very fast.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like he stops time and does whatever he wants.
Yeah.
In this one, he's just really fast, you know, and I felt like it was a more realistic portrayal of super speed. Yeah.
I will say, I like how they've used Scarlet Witch since then. I didn't necessarily love how they used her in this movie because, I mean, she was just all over the place on the powers. Like, they've really pumped up her telekinetic ability since then, and they've made her very powerful, but, like, I couldn't tell what was coming and what was going with the way she was, like, playing with people's minds and whatever, and there just didn't seem to be any consistency to what was happening at all. And I just didn't, I wasn't into any of that, really.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't understand, you know, there's a couple times where they tried to make her almost like horror movie villain-ish.
Yes.
Where,
like,
she would back out of the room.
Yeah, that's the way it was shot and stuff like that.
Like, that's why would she...
And it's one of those things, because, you know, it's like, that happens, and it's like, okay, like, is Tony Stark seeing that happen? Or am I just seeing that happen? Because there's no way she actually just backed out of a room like she was the Ring. So who was that shot for?
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. And the idea of showing them, tearing them up from the insides, I like. It's just the way it came across in film. I never got it.
Yep.
I had a real hard time explaining what that stuff was to Spencer.
Yeah.
He did not, a 5-year-old did not comprehend what any of that meant. And he just kept, like, every time it was happening, he was like, I just kept trying to explain, she's giving him bad dreams. She's giving him bad dreams. And he was still just like, well, how come, like, he didn't understand why it was different for everybody, too. Like, it was kind of exhausting trying to, like, explain all that stuff to him. So, I don't know, like, I never really thought too much of it until I had to try to explain it. And then I was just like, well.
it also gave us that, first of all, the Thor vision, the one bright spot about the weird vision stuff to me was the little nod they gave to the guys in the background in the Thor vision wearing the wolf mask, the ram mask, and the heart mask. The little angel nod.
Oh, did that? Yeah. I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
You can look it up online or go back and watch it or whatever. There's sort of the background. That's awesome. And honestly, if I hadn't read it online, I never would have noticed what the masks were. But as soon as they said it and showed me the picture, I was like, oh, awesome. You
can't unsee it.
Yeah, exactly. Terrific, you know.
That's cool.
But the movie gave us that weird Thor scene where, like, they're trying to set up the Infinity Stones now. Yeah. They're really trying to give us that. But, man, that is just shoehorned in there.
Right.
It gives this movie no narrative support whatsoever. It just and it's a weird scene. Like, it brings Selvig in. Great. Yep. It's fun to see him. But then he's like, he just goes into a pool and there's some electricity and then there's some Infinity Stones. And then we're back to our actual story going, what the?
Yeah, what was that?
That's as weird as if they had, like, sat down and he had some emails, like, on a flash drive with a bunch of...
That's some straight-up DC stuff there.
I like it.
I will say, like, when they're showing the stones, that was kind of neat because, like... I liked how, like, it showed the Tesseract open up and, like, the stone come out of it. And, like, it showed, like, the ether kind of form into the stone. So, like, it almost, like, visually showed us how all that stuff works as the Infinity Stones. Because at that time, I think there were still a lot of people, like, there was still a lot of question around that. Yeah. Like,
well,
like,
I think the problem is after that, there were still a lot of questions.
But, so this movie told, because this is also where he found out that the Mind Stone was what was inside Loki's staff, which is why he was controlling people's minds with the staff. Yep. So,
which made, I think we all sort of thought that the staff was just powered by the Tesseract.
Yeah, we've talked
about it. We didn't realize that that was two different Infinity Stones.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Marvel realized it at that point. Because even in the first Avengers, Selvig references, you can't defend against yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When he's talking about the Tesseract and the Force Field around it, they use Loki's staff, and he says that, like, oh, it's the same power, you know what I mean? So, like, I don't think they had necessarily decided.
They hadn't decided yet. Yeah, right. That makes sense. But now we know.
Yep.
Now it's the Mind Stone. And that becomes a big part of what Ultron's hoping to use, right? Because he takes that staff because it's got the Mind Stone in it, because the whole thing is, like, he's trying to build himself a better body.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what ultimately becomes Vision.
Yep.
That was supposed to be his new body. So that's a really interesting way to bring Vision into the world, I think.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that they made the little gem in Vision's head the Mind Stone, because that's not a thing in the books, right?
Not that,
like,
I know
he's
of.
Got that gem on his head, but it's not an Infinity Stone, I don't think. But it's a really interesting way to bring him into the movie world, I thought. I thought that works out well. And the fact that he's basically just Jarvis. Which is kind of, it works out perfect too, like the actor, like, portraying
Paul
Vision.
Bettany's.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So cool.
It's
like,
so
and
cool.
And how great does that retroactively make getting Paul Bettany for that role in the first place?
I know, right?
Like, there's no way they saw that in 2008.
You know,
they just happen to be like, oh, we already have a guy who's awesome,
right?
Yeah,
and it fits thematically, so let's just do it. You know,
I kind of love since we're talking about Vision, the way that he, like, makes himself look, like, after he comes out, because he's just like a... when he first comes out, he's like all purple looking. But, you know, after he kind of sits there and looks at the city for a minute, all of a sudden, like, he just, like, gets, like, the green suit on his body. And then he lands next to Thor, and he looks at Thor's cape, and then makes himself a cape.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we've got Vision,
yep,
the way he looks in the comics.
Yep.
I thought that was really fun.
and I loved the bit with Mjolnir there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how do we even know we can trust this guy? And then he just hands Thor his hammer like it's nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Also, a lot, like you said earlier, a lot of the character interaction stuff in this movie is top-notch. That whole party scene at the beginning.
Is so good.
Yeah, and when they do the bit where everybody's trying to pick up the hammer. Oh. You know, I caught a little bit. This is the first time I kind of had this thought, and probably just reading too much into it, but when they do that bit, and Steve Rogers goes to pick it up,
mm-hmm.
and it shifts just a little bit.
Yep.
Did you get any kind of impression that he could have moved it more?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just totally.
Yeah,
and totally. Didn't want to.
Okay, because this is the first time I caught that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
this makes me feel much better.
Yeah.
Because I even went back and rewatched and went, "How have I never seen that before?" Yeah. It's probably just me. So you guys are making me the more vindication.
Yeah.
You know? I just love the uneasy look on Thor's face during that whole thing.
Yeah. And because I also wanted to, like, does Thor know he just did him a solid?
Yeah.
But I love when Tony and Rhodey both go and get their Iron Man gauntlets.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to, like, jet power that thing.
And they got, like, the thrusters going and everything while they're trying
and they're
to
yelling at each other.
Are you even pulling?
Yep. And then that leads to that whole conversation at the very end too. They're like, you know, you put the hammer on an elevator, elevator goes up. Elevator's not worthy.
Yeah,
right.
You know? It's like you can just pick it up because he's a machine. That's why. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's good stuff for sure. I was way into that. This movie gave us the Hulkbuster fights.
Yes. Yep.
Which I remember that being a real exciting thing leading into this movie because they teased us with that in the trailer and fans got way excited that we were going to see a Hulkbuster versus Hulk fight. That's definitely one of the fun parts of this movie, I'd say. I love that scene.
I love the Veronica code name.
Yeah.
Or whatever, which is not something... It's another thing I read online. I didn't catch myself, but somebody made reference to how that was basically an Archie reference because the Hulk love interest, Bruce Banner's love interest, is named Betty. And so then they make basically the thing that can actually stop, like the antithesis of that.
Right.
And then they call it Veronica.
Wow. I did not realize that. Yeah. That's clever.
But all the Stark Banner stuff, as it always is great in this.
Yeah.
Because, they basically create Ultron together.
Yep.
They make reference to the Veronica project, you know, before we ever see it. It's just kind of a neat little scene there where, you know, he says something about not... Basically, Stark kind of threatens him with it, and Banner shuts him down, and he's like, hey, you helped create it, you know?
Right.
And then we get to see what it is later.
Yeah.
That fight scene is very... I think it feels a little out of place because it's an offshoot of that claw scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is one that, like from a story perspective... It didn't feel like it flowed into it perfectly, but then once you got into it, it didn't matter. It's just an awesome action scene, you know. And this does set up a lot of the how powerful are these guys, and can they be trusted in our world because they just keep knocking our cities over,
with
no warning.
Well, this is a big one for that, right?
Yeah,
like with Hulk
and they
going berserker and just wrecking everything and putting people in harm, and
they really play it up in the aftermath. I mean, Banner is just done.
After this. Well, like, even Hulk gets sad, right? Like, because there's that moment when he kind of snaps out of the Scarlet Witch's stuff, and Hulk's looking around, seeing everybody afraid of him, and even Hulk looks sad.
Yeah.
So, like, it even affected Hulk, which is kind of awesome. Like, even Hulk knows he messed up. But I just love, the Veronica starts with, like, that little cage that erects around him. And Hulk just, like, pounds through the ground and comes up around it. I love that. I was like, that is so amazing. And go to sleep when he's just pounding him in the face. And then he gives him that shot, and Hulk just, like, spits that tooth out and turns and looks at him. And Tony goes, I'm sorry. That's so good. Yeah, that whole scene was awesome. I love that. Good comic book scene there, for sure.
Yep.
Gosh, I don't even know. Any other notes you got?
It was neat seeing the return of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
Sort of. Yeah. Like the helicarrier and stuff. Yeah, also, did you notice the guy from Winter Soldier that refused to launch the ships?
Yep.
Was on the deck here commanding
totally.
Not necessarily commanding, but he was one of the
locked
guys.
Locked and topped and
Locked,
ready to... It's full of people and ready to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
So most of my notes are just little things that I liked, or that made me laugh. When the Iron Legion shows up in Sokovia, mm-hmm. and some dude is just waiting there with a jar of acid to throw on one of them. I was like, is that just a thing in Sokovia? Yeah. They just don't leave home without a jar of acid.
Did you notice they had Spader's voice?
No, I didn't.
Oh, they did?
Yep, they were there. They were basically Ultron's voice.
Oh, yeah. Cool. That's neat.
Yeah. I love the scene where Iron Man flies in and shoots all those dudes. Well, he flies in and they're shooting at him, and he's like, hold on, guys, we need to talk this out. And he shoots all of them in the legs.
Yeah.
And he goes, good talk. And that one guy goes, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, that one, yeah. That one wasn't.
Do you have Strucker's line on there?
No.
I love that. Yeah. When he was like rallying the troops.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, he's like, can we hold them off? They're the Avengers.
Yeah.
But then he's like, all right, we'll never surrender. We'll show them what it is. We'll go get them. And then turns right around and whispers to the guy next to him, I'm going to prepare to surrender.
Yeah. I'm going to surrender. I really like Cap's suit in this.
Yeah. Mm,
yep.
This is one of his best suits, I think.
Yeah. Also, great line from him at the early part there when him and Marty
Language.
Hill.
No,
language. Yeah, that was
that's
hilarious.
That's a good running joke for the whole movie.
But the probably the Capist moment.
Yeah.
For him, from a character's perspective, when Maria Hill's going over the powers of the twins and stuff like that, and he's saying something. She's basically talking about them like they're bad guys,
right?
And he's going, "Yeah, who would ever submit to some weird experimentation to help save their country? That is terrible. What kind of monster would do that?" And she's like, "Well, I mean, you're a little different. We were at war," and he's like, "So are they."
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
That's on my list.
Okay. Yeah, that's
I
good.
Love that.
Sorry
love
to undercut you.
No, it's fine. It doesn't. We're not doing these in any order per se. No, but I love that scene. And that's super Cap.
Yep.
But not Cap as you would think about it. You know, and I think that's one of the things they do really well with Captain America in the MCU, because he does have such a, you know, like, I think we forget that he's not super patriotic, you know, because he's Captain America, you know, we forget that he's not super patriotic Superman with a shield, you know what I mean?
Right,
yeah.
He's has his own opinions and sees the world a certain way, you know?
Yeah.
He's what patriotism should be.
Yes. Yeah. You know, yes. And so it's great when we get those little reminders because, you know, he does say stuff. Yeah, who would ever submit to a, you know, who would ever volunteer to be experimented on by a German scientist to protect his country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a great, and you're like, well, you know? Yeah.
Point well taken.
You know? And then when she says, well, we're not at war, you know, you're like, yeah, oh yeah, we're not at war, and he's like, well, they are, and you're like, oh
yeah
they are. Yeah. It's like a lesson from Cap right there, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh
yeah.
sorry Cap. Yeah. Oh man. I really laugh. I just thought it was great after the Strucker scene. Banner's got a pair of Beats on.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're on, like, a Stark spaceship, essentially. You know what I mean? Like they're the Avengers, but he's got a pair of Beats.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, somebody's got to pay for all those Quinjets.
Hey, somebody's, yep.
He says that, though, too, at one point, right? Like, he calls Cap the leader. He's like, I just pay for everything.
Yeah.
He's like,
I just pay for everything and design everything and make us look cool. On that scene when they're on the Quinjet, when Widow's trying to calm down Banner, or trying to, you know, comfort Banner, and she asks Thor, you know, Hulk report, and he's like, you know, the gates of hell are, you know,
ushering in the souls of your enemies or whatever.
Yeah, you know, and he's like, he says something about the screams of his defeated enemies, you know, they give him that look, and he's like, well, not dead souls.
Yeah.
Injured souls.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wailing and and moaning and complaining of sprained deltoids. Like, that's a funny scene in itself. I think this is the first time I made sure to notice Captain America standing right behind him. Because he just gives him this look like, good job, buddy. Saved it. So I really enjoyed that. I like the way Banner, we mentioned, I like the way Banner interacts with Tony. You know, it's great to see. They do a real good job. Like, Tony always starts to kind of talk down to Banner, mm-hmm. and Banner's always, like, right there with him, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And we see Stark talk down to everybody. So, and not in, like, necessarily a condescending way.
No,
but he's smarter than everybody and has to explain everything.
Yep.
And
he forgets that Banner's an equal.
Yes.
Not in a rude way, because, man, they are buddy-buddy.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yep. So, I like seeing that. I laugh every single time in the party scene at both times War Machine is telling his story.
Oh, my God, dude. Yeah. That is so amazing.
Yeah.
Is this the tank you're looking for?
Yeah.
Dude, when everybody, boom. Yeah, when everybody starts reacting to him the second time, when he just looks around and like gives that.
That's another Thor moment, too, where he's like, oh, is that the end of the story? Well, then it's a very good story. I liked the party scene where Thor and Stark are going over, trying to pull up, play up their love interests, you know? Like, they're basically just having a one-upsmanship about their ladies.
Yeah. My favorite part about that is Thor's closing line is just straight up, Jane's better. It's a great Stan Lee scene there.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
I love when he's Well, I even love before when he's got that, I don't know, magical alcohol,
it is. Asgardian booze.
Aged for 1,000 years and
Asgardian apple juice.
Right. Yeah, Asgardian apple juice.
Yep.
And he gives them a bit.
This was not made for mortal men. Neither was Normandy. I'll just hand it over.
It made me wonder if, because in Captain America we get the scene where Cap can't get drunk anymore. Yeah. As much as we see Thor drink, can Thor get drunk?
Oh.
You know?
I think on the Asgardian stuff he can.
Okay,
yeah.
So then that made me wonder. So, you know, was that stuff getting cat buzzed? You know, because he put cat something.
You know, I was thinking the same thing this time through. It's like that would have been a good scene or a good time to just show Cap a little wobbly or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So at the end of the party scene, after they do the thing, the first time Ultron shows up. I really like that everybody's getting ready for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many times in a movie, an action movie, do we see a clearly ominous being show up making thinly veiled threats and everybody just is like, oh, what's going on? come on in, sit down, where are we at? You know, like they all jump immediately. You know, we see, you know, Maria Hill pulls a gun. You know what I mean? Like everybody is like, well, this is not a good thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you don't see that super often. So I was watching that and I was kind of like, yeah, hell yeah. I can't even be like, well, you guys had to see that come. You know, right. Normally you're like, man, if some weird half-faced robot walked in there, I would not just be trying to reprogram
it. The way he introduced himself was so wonderfully creepy also. Because he just like is like this mangled bot, you know, just sort of walks in. And then when they end that whole thing with the creepy Pinocchio stuff,
Well, I even love after the whole fight and he just goes, well, that was dramatic.
Awesome.
I noticed Tony says when he's talking about when he wants to build Ultron,
mm-hmm.
he specifically at one point goes, "That's the end game."
Yeah,
you know,
I noticed that too.
Yep. You know, when he's talking about you know the aliens come, and he's like, "That's the end game up there."
Yeah,
I just noticed that. Well, I guess that was actually that was probably when he was talking about building Vision, because
yeah.
But yeah, so I thought that was just a little neat tidbit.
I love
that's pretty much it for me, man. That's all you know. That's there's a lot to like about the movie, but it doesn't get super, you know.
Yeah,
it's
the worst Avengers movie.
Yeah.
Still pretty good, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the lowest tier Avengers movie, I guess, because you have to think about that. Because it's like, oh yeah, Infinity War is only the third Avengers movie,
yeah.
So it definitely ranks at the bottom of those Avengers movies. Yes,
I think we also have to acknowledge a bit of the holding pattern that Age of Ultron is.
Yes.
We know we're headed towards the Thanos stuff by now.
Right, right.
You know, and
yeah, and that, I mean, that's, you know, there was not really a way to get around. I mean, you could have made a better movie. I'm not saying this is the best it could have been by any means, but yeah. There is the fact that you're not introducing it,
right?
So you don't have that going for you, and you're building towards something everybody knows is coming. So you're not going to give too many huge surprises or anything right. like that. Like, yeah. You just sort of have to exist as a bridge and yeah. do what you can. You know?
Well, that's even the thing with the... Were you going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, Ultron's kind of one of those classic Avengers villains, too. So it was really cool to see him do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, they started with Loki in the first Avengers movie, and Loki's, like, one of the first Avengers main
yeah.
villains. So it was neat to see them follow those steps of, like, iconic Avengers villains for these movies. And Ultron was a good one to use here as, like, a segue mm-hmm. into the big, giant
yeah.
thing that we were
yep.
getting ready to do. Something we didn't mention is how in the comics, Hank Pym is the one
mm-hmm.
that built Ultron, not Tony and Bruce.
Yeah.
So they made that play well into this world,
yeah.
I think. Making Ultron basically, like... the evolution of Tony's stuff
yes,
totally
yes.
makes sense in the MCU.
Well, and making him an anti-Tony, I think, was a perfect
yeah,
thing
yeah.
for this movie, too. Because, I mean, like, Tony Stark is, at times, the biggest villain in the MCU.
He can be.
You
yeah.
know, period.
Yeah.
Like, not intentionally, necessarily, but, man, most of the things that happen that are absolutely terrible are his fault in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
You know? And they play the redemption arc with him a lot, but, like, he has to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And, again, you get those scenes, like, when the twins are basically talking about how, you know, his inventions destroyed their entire world.
Yep.
And it really, you know, when then you get the things like the conflict that happened in Civil War, where he is just so high and mighty on the damage they've done and this and that. It's like, dude, you've been doing damage your entire life.
Right.
Like, all of the messes we're cleaning up are mostly your messes.
Right.
All are mostly. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
but you get the point there.
Yeah.
And again, I really like that. I mean, I love the Iron Man character, but I also love when they remind us how terrible he
yeah.
kind of is, you know?
Well, and I also, you gotta, in acknowledging that, you have to appreciate that, like, he's aware of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
and
yeah,
they,
yeah,
and
yeah,
they call
yeah.
that out very clearly in this
yeah.
movie, where he goes, we're mad scientists, man. Make
yeah.
peace with it.
Yeah.
You know? When he's talking to Banner.
yeah.
yeah. Banner's like, you made another murder bot?
Yeah. Oh my God. Cool. All right. Well, I think that
That's
pretty
it.
Much puts a
yeah,
yeah pretty
yeah,
much puts
probably.
A caps on.
I guess we could talk. I was gonna bring up the end scene.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Not quite the credit scene. Although it's a total illustration of what's wrong with the movie.
You're talking about not the post-credit scene. You're talking about the actual ending.
I'm talking about the post-credit scene.
Okay, the actual
oh,
ending
all right.
first.
The
I want
ending.
To get into because they do kind of the new team roundup
yep.
there, which I want to point out. This was another one of those almost was is because this was being made and finished right around the time that the Sony deal was coming through. The partnership there.
Yeah.
So I think by the time this came out, I believe we knew there was going to be MCU Spider-Man coming. And I remember reading about how, like, there was almost time to get him in that last shot.
Yeah.
And they ended up not. But that could have been our introduction to Spider-Man in the MCU, was basically them going through that scene and Spider-Man just popping up on the new team thing there. Which doesn't necessarily play into what they did with the Spider-Man
yeah.
movie, so it works
yeah.
out fine that it wasn't there. But I remember, like, before we had the actual movie, just reading that news and just being, like, halfway to crush. I was like, oh, God, that would have been such a fanboy moment
yeah.
had that happen. But we do get the end there too, where it just trails off into the, you know, like they're talking about the new recruits. You also get, we didn't mention the Hulk stuff, because remember Hulk disappeared after this movie too. Like,
yep, he got
that was yeah, and it was a weird like conscious Hulk moment.
Yeah,
because he as Hulk
shuts off the
comm thing and just keeps going, and they really played up the end of that movie after the whole big Hulkbuster scene where they destroy that town. Like I said, I mean, Banner's wrecked for the rest of that movie. And even when he goes to save Black Widow, like, his goal is basically, all right, you're safe now. Now, we got to get out of here. I just can't do this anymore. Yep. And she basically forces him into hulking out and helping save the day. But at the end, even as Hulk, he consciously decides, can't do this, got to go. Yeah. And, I mean, they really haven't followed up on that exactly quite yet.
Well, except we know that he never turned back to Banner. Hulk was just in control after that.
Exactly.
Point.
Yeah. But, like, the pairing, I don't know. I mean, it's not like he's smart Hulk or anything like that yet. Or we've talked about what they might be doing coming soon or what they've teased here and there.
Yeah.
But that's the first time Hulk makes a decision that is more than...
Yeah.
You know,
more I mean, than
I
Smash.
Guess, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I guess he saved Tony in the first one, so he's done stuff like that. But that one, I mean, like, they drew that out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a moment he's going through a process and then decides to do that.
Yep.
And even when you get to Ragnarok, he's still pretty much Hulk.
Yeah.
Until they banner him down, you know, and stuff like that. So that was kind of a turning point for the character.
Yeah.
That is worthy of mentioning, I think.
Definitely.
And then the trail off at the very end when they're showing the new recruits and they're going through all that stuff, and you get Captain America and they pan up to him and he's like, Avengers! And then it cuts off.
Before he says assemble.
Yeah, we still haven't gotten the assemble thing yet.
Yeah.
So, and then post-credits.
So, and the post-credits, as I keep trying to say, is kind of indicative of what's wrong with this movie. You know, the big thing is... because it doesn't really fit with the movie at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it is pure. It is done purely for the audience action, you know, interaction. Because it's Thanos putting on the gauntlet.
Fine.
And going, fine, I'll do it myself. Yeah. And, you know, that had nothing to do with Ultron. Nope. It had nothing to do with it. He doesn't even know the Avengers. Well, I guess he knows the Avengers, but, you know, like, it just had nothing to do with this movie.
Yeah.
It's just world building. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, basically just a commercial for Infinity War,
that would have fit better after the first Avengers.
Because
the first Avengers, they're trying to take over Earth. There's interaction with Infinity Stones. They're you know, it's powering something. They've got stuff that they're doing with it. And then in this one, I mean, they talk about the Infinity Stones, but nobody's looking for them.
Thor makes that comment where he's like, four Infinity Stones have shown up in the past however many years. That's not a coincidence. This is somebody's playing a game. He says that specifically. So I guess,
but it's
this
in that weird
of,
like throwaway scene that nobody understood. Like, you know, you get the sense
it's at the end. It's right before he leaves.
It's right before the Avengers Assemble scene.
Because they ask him if you can find out who. Can you find out what's coming?
Because now Thor's leaving to do the Ragnarok thing. Just like Hulk and Thor both just went to the same place.
Thor went back to Asgard.
Yeah, first.
And then got...
Yeah. Then ends up there.
Well,
we'll talk about it in a couple weeks.
Thor goes hurtling across the galaxy trying to find... And ends up in Surtur's...
Yeah.
Dungeon.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about Ragnarok.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch it again so we can.
Yeah. Awesome.
You know, I think the MCU movies are starting to slip off of Netflix also.
Yeah.
Because I was the Netflix run started with Civil War on Phase 3 and it's already not on there.
Yeah, so right now you can watch Ragnarok, Ant-Man and Wasp, Infinity War and Black Panther. Those are the only four MCU movies on there. So the tail end of that phase.
So I gotta find Civil War and Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. So those are
all of them.
I mean, they're not hard to find.
You can find them. All right.
All right, guys.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up our look back at Age of Voltron.
Age of Voltron.
Elmo. Say the right name.
Ultron.
There you go.
Age of Ultron. All right, guys. Well, hopefully you've been enjoying the show. Make sure you stay tuned because we got a lot more to talk about still, and we are getting so close to Endgame. It's going to be awesome. Really excited about it.
Next up is Ant-Man.
Yep.
Go watch Ant-Man.
Go watch Ant-Man. Get prepared for that. We'll be discussing that very, very soon. Make sure you guys are subscribed to us on YouTube if you watch the video version. If you prefer audio, make sure you follow and rate us on iTunes or Stitcher or Podbean or Google Play or however you prefer to do it. We are all just part of the Geek Easy podcast feed, so you'll find Marvel Good Yay along with our other shows like the main Geek Easy podcast as well as the Streak Easy, which is our podcast about the Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. So lots of good content for you guys. You should definitely check it all out. I think that's going to wrap things up.
I believe so.
All right. So until next time, guys.
Marvel Good Yay.
The Geek Easy podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of The Geek Easy Podcast.